Hub CP podcast.
It's dead simple.
We're here to inspire entrepreneurs
and celebrate rebels.
We want to provoke reaction, share ideas,
color your gray cells, and entertain.
Nothing's off limits. Nothing.
From Cooper Parry,
the Rebels of Accountancy.
This is the Hub CP podcast.
Let's do it.
Hi, I'm Ben, and today we've invited Suzanne Linton from Freestyle into the Hub CP podcast. One of the reasons why we invited her wasn't necessarily because she's grown an amazing business over the last number of years and has seen every type of growth along the way, but after speaking with Suzanne, the one thing that really strikes me about her is her ability to question the systems, the structures, and the processes about how businesses operate. And genuinely, can businesses grow and perform in a fair and consistent way? Why don't we start with, tell me a little bit about, did you start out wanting to be a CEO when you were at college, university? Is that something that was always something that you wanted to be?
I don't think I ever wanted to be a CEO per se. I don't think I ever wanted, I suppose I had two goals. One was, I'd come from an entrepreneurial family, so my dad, I was a market trader, selling carpets and rugs in the market, but I saw all in what he did, all the things it took to run a business, so I understood business. So I think I always imagined I would have my own business, but I didn't expect it to be a big one with lots of people in it.
Yeah.
But the other side of it was I was brought up in Yorkshire, and I suppose I wanted to escape. I wanted to get as far away. And I wanted to have adventure. I wanted to experience life, and I didn't think I was going to find it in darkest brick house. I was talking to my partner the other day, and we realised that our similar drive was around not being ordinary.
Right. Okay.
And looking at suburbia in the 70s and going, God,
that's not for me.
God, I escape this.
Yeah.
So the other part of me wanted to have a big career where I would go, I'd work in big multinational companies and have the opportunity to travel,
sure,
live in big cities in Europe somewhere, and fail because I got as far as Birmingham.
So just going back to this thing about this term entrepreneur, because I think it's something which people define in different ways, and it's, you know, you, as you say, your dad was an entrepreneurial guy, as a market trader. I describe you as an entrepreneur in the way that you've grown your business. But what if someone says, well, what is Suzanne, what is an entrepreneur? How would you describe that?
I don't know. I have no idea how you'd I suppose it's the get up and go.
Yeah.
To recognise where you can make a difference,
sure,
in some field, whether it's your expertise or a particular area where you see something that could be different, something that could be done better.
Yeah, yeah.
And then a drive to be able to deliver on that.
Yeah. And before your journey, I mean, you talked about your journey from Yorkshire to Birmingham. Wow.
Yeah.
tell me about those sort of moments of truth that happened in that journey that kind of created your view on how business should be done. I mean, what were the big things that happened in your career? Because, am I right, you know, you're an accountant by trade.
I did my chartered accountancy training within a medium-sized practice, and at that time, so this would have been the late 80s,
yeah,
and the secretaries wore suits, the accountants, the accountants didn't.
Right.
The female accountants didn't. That you weren't worthy enough. The partner's secretaries wore suits.
Wow.
So it was very much a hierarchical thing. It was very, I mean, what I disliked about that was the hierarchy.
Yeah, yeah.
It was very much timesheeted. Every 6 minutes you had to account for. And then people standing with their coats on behind their desks at 2:05.
Really?
It was just, you know, that wasn't the place I came from. I come from a sporting background where you knew you had to get things out, you had to put things in.
Yeah.
I didn't want to leave until I'd finished, but it was that sort of, you're letting the team down if you don't comply by the rules. So
that
sort of passive aggressive,
yeah.
This is the way we operate around here, so you're not wearing a suit. If you don't leave at five, if you just want to stay till 5:30, then you're making the rest of us look bad, so you're not one of the group. It was, and I really railed against that. So as soon as I'd qualified, it was like, I'm out.
I think, to a point, those cultures still exist in business, which is quite
scary.
Sad. I mean, I remember working for a firm, and we had, you talk about the suits, but we had a fee earners chair and a support team chair. Seriously. And the chair was like, for the support team, for the secretaries, the chair, it was an upright chair with no armrests, ironically, but was very much designed to sit at a desk. The fee earners chair was a lower, almost like a lounge chair.
It's a Star Trek.
Yeah, you just sort of, yeah, exactly. but it had this like recliner on it as well. So it was kind of, it was amazing when someone described, oh no, that's a fee earner chair and that's a support chair. But you know, you pick which one you want, sort of thing. It's like, oh right, thank you. But why are we defining it anyway? So yeah, I mean, so this notion of like, yeah, you kind of got the technical training within a very sort of controlled environment.
Yeah.
You got the badge, you got your badge and gun.
It's a big wild world.
Exactly. What happens next?
I tried 6 months of recruitment. In accountancy recruitment, and I think that the recruitment firm couldn't believe their luck that a chartered accountant wanted to come and work in recruitment.
Yeah.
But I quickly realised that sales was not for me, it was not my bag. And so I turned to my colleagues and said, find me, you know me, you've worked with me for 6 months, find me, here I am on fodder, find me a job.
Yeah.
And I think they took a bit of a piss take when they sent me to some of the interviews. I come out and just go, why did you send me there? So I remember sitting in one interview where the two people interviewing me were sat behind, in front of some very grey filing cabinets in a very grey office somewhere in North Manchester. They were both wearing grey suits. And I was wearing a red suit. I just walked in, just went. I thought I might as well just turned around and walked straight out again. It was like going, this is not going to work.
Yeah.
So I eventually got a job with AMEC PLC, and that was with their corporate review team, which is a mixture of accountants and quantity surveyors. And our job, and the reason I took the job was it was travel.
Yeah.
And it was also supposedly a step into the construction industry.
Yeah.
Businesses, so that you had a couple of years on this corporate review team visiting all the different companies within the group. I was North America and Europe, and half the group were then Australia and Europe. And the idea was you would just get recruited into one of those companies within the 2 to 3 years. But that was early 1991,
right.
Big recession, construction industry was going through some very bad times.
You
can see, you know, you're in a privileged position because you're looking at all the finances and everything, so you can see how the business is operating.
Yeah.
You're sitting with, as quite an early doors chartered accountant with these big FDs who've got lots of experience, and you're questioning them on their decision making. So it was quite a privileged position to be in. But whilst doing that, there was one, she wasn't even a financial director, she was a financial controller, but it was the biggest civil engineering business in the whole group. And she was the highest female in the profession. She was more masculine than any of the blokes. Everyone was scared to death of her. She was lovely underneath it all. But
was it a bit of a facade then?
I think she had to put it on in order to, she made it.
Yeah.
She was probably in her 40s. But she was, in every single way, more of a man than any of the men were.
Right.
To survive in the fine. It was, I mean, some of the tales around what. Now you're looking back and you go, did that really happen?
Really?
Things like, one of my jobs, I had to go and audit what was happening on the shop floor, and I was prevented from going to do that because it'd be too distracting for the men on the shop floor, and at health and safety reasons, it would be bad for me to do that.
Is this because you're?
Because I was a female.
Because you're a female.
They don't have wives, daughters, or sisters at home. Presumably, they're not used to some weird thing where they're not.
Right. And what year was this? 1991, was it?
It would have been. 1990, 1991,
Amazing. Okay, we're going to come back to this this point, because I think it's a topic which you and I have been talking a lot about over the past few weeks. Let's just fast forward to then. So you've gone through this kind of almost this seeing firsthand being an employee of a business, and you're now at this stage, or you're getting to this stage where Freestyle is about to be born.
Well, from that, I went into a VAT consultancy. So yeah. I sort of came out of that, went to a VAT consultancy, and I was number 24, 25 in the door as a financial controller. It grew very, very rapidly. And it was a husband and wife team. They were very ambitious. And we were working all the hours.
Yeah.
And it was very exciting. And you know, we went from 25 to 65 people within 2 years.
Right.
And I think I saw within that how the role of FD sort of acquires IT, HR, all the things that office admin, all the things nobody quite knows what to do with.
Yeah.
But again, I find that really exciting. But you sort of start to realise you're putting all those hours in, and you might as well do it yourself.
Yeah,
might as well run your own business for your own benefit.
Sure, sure.
And what I learned, what I didn't like there was the politics.
Okay.
So it was a massive amount of politics.
In what way? How did that manifest?
I was put onto the board, and there was a lot of like school playground. Slightly bullying. You know, there were people on the board who would gang up against one person to get them off.
Right.
You know, they're not doing a very good job, are they? And there's a bit like backroom sort of planning about this going on. And you're just thinking, hang on a minute, you're going to come for me next, aren't
right.
you? I'm just not comfortable doing this. This is not how I want to operate.
And was that kind of board level culture as a result of just the business, regardless of its growth trajectory? Or was it amplified by, you know, the bigger, you know, obviously the sort of the journey that you've been going through, the growth that you're experiencing? Did that almost shine a light on that bullying culture? Or
I think it was a mixture of some people who had little experience on the board, me included, and other people who got a much more experience. But I think it was also quite very sales led.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of the macho sales. Environment.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like, I'm not quite sure, that sort of sale.
That bravado almost, yeah.
Yeah, but you
know. Yeah, I know what you mean. It's that kind of, it's almost that one-upmanship of like, if I can expose someone's weakness, I'm happy to do it around a room of people, and then, you know, I'll kind of, you know, show my massive beat my chest at the same time sort of thing,
It felt like going back to the playground.
Yeah. So you kind of, so up into this journey, it sounds like, you know, you're getting all of this experience about what doesn't feel fair, what doesn't feel right, despite the fact that these businesses are growing as well. And that inspired you to move on and say, okay, I can do this, but I want to do this for me.
Yeah, that was the point where so I'm with my husband Alan at the time.
Yeah.
He had his own business. He wasn't happy with what he was doing, and actually, it was about jacking it all in and going travelling.
Yeah.
But one of our clients sort of said, "Oh, well, we'd like you to continue working with us." And we said, "Well, we'll do that for 9 months of the year, and then we'll go and travel for 3 months, and we'll do it that way around." But then we did it too well, so they wanted us to do it twice as much the year after, and you started having to employ people. So it was not by intention to start with.
Yeah.
It wasn't about we're going to change the world. It was sort of.
So you didn't have a purpose. So what did you want Freestyle to represent though as a business?
I think at the time it was about a better work-life balance for us.
Yeah.
But that then was about saying, but if we can have it, I'm sort of quite egalitarian in my view about whatever rules apply to me apply to everybody in the company. So it was you know, if I can take 3 months off, then so can anyone else. It's not my. Just because I own it, I don't have different rules.
And how did that kind of, I guess, that approach, how did that help in attracting talent? I mean, give us an example of the sorts of ways in which you operate as a business that might be different to what other organisations operate.
I don't ever really sit and compare what we do with other people. To me, it's about coming back to whatever is the way. To me, so our rules are things like we're not doing politics, no bitching.
Yeah.
being open and honest about what's happening, being kind, being nice people, being fair about how we go about it. But also, I mean, there was a thing that it's probably still true now. There was a saying that sort of said all the profits in an agency are made after 5 o'clock,
right.
And so therefore, and it's normal, you know, normal practice that 8, 9 o'clock working at night is not unusual. And even today, and you still hear that today. And you're going through the 90s. I've sat on Zoom calls in the last 2 years and learned so much about what happened in agencies when I was in agencies that I never knew happened. But you'd heard stories about, you know, coke fueled whatever, expense card parties and all sorts of things.
Sure. Like,
we never did any of that. And you said, did I miss out? No.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to be there. But also, I suppose you're then attracting people who've. I mean, we attracted quite a lot of people who come out of London who didn't want to do that anymore. And to me, it was about that is work-life balance. People, to me, you're in a creative industry where you expect people's brains to be firing at their very best. Ideas, solutions to problems, what's the best route to do things. And if people are knackered or have basically experienced one journey to work and back every day for 5 days and have not done anything else in the meantime, how on earth can you expect them to be at their best?
And so you've seen, so creating that culture, we get the best out of our people. What about, where doesn't it, I mean, what are the challenges in promoting that type of culture? Because is it always plain sailing? Or, where does it go wrong, do you think? I mean, it may not be with Freestyle, but where do you think the challenges?
I know, absolutely. I think part of it is you can be seen as too nice. You have to hold to your principles. You have to be very honest and open when things aren't going right. So, if somebody starts taking the piss and stretching the leeway you give, then everyone else sees it and goes, well, if they can do it, then so can I. And that it very quickly falls apart. And we've been guilty of that in the past. And
right. So how do you control it without controlling it almost?
I know, that's my,
it's
that's
a real
like,
hard
I
one,
am
isn't
not
it?
A bi- yes, I'm not a big rule. I don't like rules. I don't like process.
No. You're not allowed to run across a train track, by the way. So, yeah, I'll follow that rule.
I struggle. I recognise that you need them.
Yeah.
I recognise that as you grow, you need more and more process. But I would always challenge what that process should be, and that the process should always be implemented by the people within the team. So
to me,
it would be about setting the rules communally.
Yeah.
And then it's not just about you who has to enforce them.
Yeah.
It's the group that says that's not acceptable.
So we're saying, so what I hear is that actually you create an environment where the team self-govern.
Yes, where you then don't get cliques and little mini fiefdoms.
Yeah.
I mean, it's human beings. Business would be so easy if it wasn't for human beings.
Yeah.
We are the strangest animals that we all want the same thing, but we all want it in our own mould, or to have power, or to have control, or whatever it is, and how people make that possible in their own environments, and it's a study in human nature, isn't it? But the whole of business is
absolutely, and there's a leader of that. I mean, like, even the term leader, you know, are you leading that culture, or do you just take a step back and look at what this culture is and work with it?
You know, you're still always learning. I still don't know exactly how to do it. I very much subscribe to the leader of service. I'm the back room pushing forward, you know, making sure everyone's got what they need to be as best to do the best job they can do in the best environment. Trying to make it, and there are times when you've got it right, and times I've got it horribly wrong. Some of that's to do with my personality. Sometimes that's to do with people. You hope in your hiring decisions you make the right decisions. You hope that if you have made the wrong decision, you act on it quickly enough for the rest of the business not to suffer on that decision.
Sure.
But
how important is it? I mean, you talk it because Freestyle has gone through kind of rapid growth. It's gone through
decline.
it's been an amazing journey. It's, you know, picked up awards along the way. It's moved into different markets and different offerings. I think one of the things that I'm interested to understand is, and the question that we're asking is, when we talk about growth, is it worth it in terms of what are you willing to sacrifice? And people talk about growth in a very positive way, and they talk about like, oh great, you know, EBITDA growth or top line growth, and we're growing 50% year on year. But the question that I speak to a lot of CEOs is like, actually, we wanted to retain this kind of thing that made us special to get to this point. And actually, that's the first thing that's on the block. That's the first thing to go, because we're becoming more process led. There's more risk that we're taking. What's your view on this?
So within what we do, we solve clients' problems, but those clients' problems change. So we started off in film video production, then we went into web build, and now we're a digital transformation agency. And that means we are looking at how we can deliver digital solutions to solve a problem that the client may not even know they have exactly yet. They haven't identified exactly what the issue is. And for me, that's because over time, either the technology has changed, that means that the client no longer has a problem that he's solving using video film production. They do again now, but there was a period in the noughties when that it was like, video? We don't do video because you can't put it online because the bandwidth isn't good enough. So you're solving those problems. What was the question?
Is it worth it? I mean, is it like when you look at what you've achieved over those periods of time, what did you have to sacrifice? What you talked about the principles that's important, be kind, no politics, no bitching. Actually, as you got to when Freestyle was at its highest number of employees and you're going through that rapid growth, were there sacrifices that you needed to make that really counteracted against what it is that you wanted as a business?
I think my view on the growth question is, I think you always need to be doing more. When you've got a team of people that have pride in their work, that want to do, and you've employed people that are excited by change. So I think agency has people that don't want to be doing that one job for one client. They want to be doing it that same job for multiple clients because it's more interesting to them.
Yeah.
There are people who come into agencies who do not like that level of disruption. But we employ people who like that over there, this over here, that constant change. Stop doing that, do this. You know, can you go back to doing that, what you're doing before right now? It's that flex and fluidity of what we do.
Yeah.
But in order to do that, you almost have to grow because you always have to be giving a new challenge to what. It's either that or change what you do. But then if you change what you do, you probably need different people to do that. It's about how you evolve and how you give people the opportunity to flex their muscles in their chosen sphere of expertise.
Right.
To really allow the best to come forward. So to me, the growth is important, but as you say, how fast and how far, I think is the question. And when we got to the biggest size, was it worth it? It's those hurdles of having to go through the periods of, that 30 people, 12 people, 30 people, probably 60 people. You have to accelerate through those growth hurdles of where you've got to add in either extra people that are non-fee earning or extra process that means you need people to monitor the process.
Sure.
And to get through those periods, it's almost like you have to get to a level and go, are we pushing on to the next level? Is it worth it? And it depends what motivates you at the time. We had three children soon after we started, not all at the same time, soon after we started the business. And looking back, we were probably absent for some part of that, which didn't fit with our intent of that work-life balance stuff. But then again, we also got the opportunity of taking the kids out of school and doing 3 months travelling at one point. We did it once.
Yeah.
But you've also got, I suppose, as I don't think you can ever do anything. I don't think you can do all things 100% well.
Right.
I don't think you can be a great partner, a great parent, and a great CEO at the same time.
Right. Yeah.
Because something has to.
Something's got to give.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you're always, you know, if maybe I've done 75%.
Yeah.
Well, at all of them.
Yeah.
And you always
look
back and go, I could have been better at that, and I wish I'd done more of that. In order to do that, I'd have had to sacrifice. You know, how many people do you look at and go, you know, you're still married, your kids are quite well adjusted, and you've still got a business.
But
it may not be the business you wanted it to be, and it may not be the career you dreamed of, because you know, and maybe that's where at the moment those aspirational things just aren't possible.
Yeah.
Really, in real life.
So, if you were non-exec director of a business that's about to almost start the journey that you were with Freestyle at that point in time, super ambitious but orientated around a balance, you know, this sort of work-life balance, what advice would you give to someone that you wish they give to you when you were doing it?
Go for counselling to check you really want to do this.
You really?
Just double check,
because once you're in, you're in, right?
Yeah, it's hard. Because the other thought is, once you've done it, who on earth is ever going to employ you again? Because you're a maverick.
Yeah.
You're like, so someone's going to, you know, I'm sort of thinking, could I ever go and get another job working for someone else? I think I could do a quite good job for somebody else.
Yeah.
Would anyone ever want me?
Why do you think that's the case? Because you're a maverick, because what, you're a rule breaker? You question everything?
Because I think you'd be a threat to somebody.
Right.
Potentially someone would see you as a threat, going, well, you're used to doing the things your way, and you're used to making all the decisions. And it's true.
Yeah.
I don't think so in the last 12 months, stepping back from the role I've been doing as MD, you don't realize, it's really hard to sit down and write down all the things that you've taken for granted and go, right, I'm going to hand this over. But you suddenly realize, I didn't realize I made decisions about that as well, or how tightly I controlled that.
Sure. Well, let's talk about that a little bit. Let's talk about the sort of your role as and that sort of succession piece, because a lot of the people who will be listening to this, they'll be CEOs, CFOs, MDs themselves, and the topic of succession is always thought about in the sort of the back of their mind, but it's normally condensed into like 3 months, and like you say, they sit down and thinking, well, what do I do? And I start writing this list, and apparently, you know, I've invented, you know, the internet or something like that. It's like the whole, you know, it's sort of enormous list of things that they do. What's important in that transitional period from, as you're trying to bring, you know, the talent into that role? What do they need to know? What do they need to feel? How much of it's emotional as well?
I think you need to have an idea of what your skill sets really are, because I think what we do is we acquire a whole lot of jobs based on what we either like doing or what comes easily. And if you're any good, you've actually found a whole lot of people to do the things you crap at, and you've found people are much better than you to do those things. But my own skill set was around, I've obviously got the financial background, and then I've got, I'm most interested in people.
Yeah, yeah.
So to me, it was about, I need a people person and I need a finance person.
Mm.
And then all the others, don't expect them to take on all the other stuff that you've also, I also do that as well, don't I?
Yeah,
it's actually then identifying who is best in the organisation to divvy up all those different roles. So don't expect people to do the same things the same way that you do.
And
give them freedom to do it their own way, but you have to set the expectations of what the end goal is.
Yeah.
And make sure they've got the same basic values that they sign up to. They're not going to completely either trash the way you do things, or spend the whole time disagreeing with how they do stuff.
And how hard, bearing in mind, there's almost, you speak to business leaders and their business is almost like the sort of the fourth child in a way. There's an emotional connection to it. How hard is it to let go of the reins and to let someone say, that's great, Suzanne, let me deal with this, but I'm going to go in this direction instead? What do you have to sort of,
you know,
bite your lip, or what's the
at times? Yes, but for the right reasons. And I suppose that's around saying, I've got somebody who's going to be an awesome MD, an awesome future leader of businesses, already is, but will be in the future even better. And my job all the way through, I suppose, all the way through everything we've always done is about how can we enable people to have awesome careers. So I look at the people in those roles now and think, they're going to be awesome. I have to step back. I cannot be all over this. And they have to do it their own way. And I can be there to advise. Do you know what? There are times, if I look back over our journey, there are times I think, I wish we'd opted out earlier. But I don't think we were. I think that fourth child scenario is very true. And I'm fortunate we've been doing it for 26 years now. So I'm, in my view as a parent,
they've got to move out.
They have to move out. And to an extent, so it might have been harder when they were 12. To go through that. And I think it probably, there were times when it was like, going, oh, no, I'm not ready for that yet. No, I can't do that. Whereas now it's like, going, do you know what? It's much easier when they're that bit older.
Absolutely.
And actually, it's you're just going to clash.
And like you say, I mean, you mentioned about being kind of orientated around the similar sort of values. A month or so ago, you came to one of the roundtable debates that we had with HubCP, and you said something that really stuck with me, because we got onto the topic of purpose. And it's a topic which we talk a lot about, and a lot of businesses are talking about purpose, and there are initiatives out there and consultancies out there that all talk about how you can create and integrate a purpose. And you said something that I found really refreshing, and you said there's a difference between being purpose-led and just doing good business. What could you tell me a little bit about what you kind of meant by that?
Well, there are businesses that are set up based on a mission and a purpose to deliver something that, I think at the moment we've got a zeitgeist where people are coming into business or into the workspace in their early 20s who want to be making a difference in the world positively. And there are some fantastic businesses out there that do that really, really well. So it's not that you don't, that all businesses don't have a purpose, but I suppose I look at what we do, and our mission is to solve our clients' problems. There's no big purpose driven in that. It's about doing good business, so we meant to make our clients happy. Our purpose, the most our purpose could be, would potentially be around the types of business we choose to help. Or not help. But the reality is that my purpose, I suppose, is to be fair, to be open, to create careers, great careers for people. I read something recently about it's about feeding the tribe, as a business leader, you become responsible for how many people's mortgages and how many people's lifestyles and that weighs heavy at times when you look at your payroll, going, how many months can I pay people's wages? And sometimes when you have to make the hard decisions to let people go. It always makes me laugh. That whole thing of if you ever have to make redundancies, that people don't realise just how sick and horrible you feel and have felt probably for 2 or 3 weeks. And you're about to make them feel. I was listening to something the other day about a policeman and sort of saying, having to do the death visit, and how you're going to change someone's life. For the detrimentally forever, and this is the moment you're about to change their lives, and having to knock on the door. I've been made redundant, and at the time it's horrible, but actually it's also a new start. It forces you to do something different, and there are times when you sort of think it's actually a gift. Yeah. Doesn't feel like it
now. No, absolutely.
But that
and a burden of being a leader, I guess, as well, is that at some point they're going to have to do this. You have to go through that themselves. And having been through that, I suppose you've got that degree of empathy to know it's happened to me, and it is terrible, but it's not the end. It will open other doors going forward. So in terms of the growth journey where Freestyle have been, and the sort of, when you look at the future and what you've learned today, what's going to be different? What are the things that you think as we move into 2023 and in the next 5 years in a sort of a post-COVID kind of environment, whatever that means? I mean, we're in a very odd world right now. I mean, one business I was talking to saying, we've stopped looking at like beyond 6 months. We're looking at even 3 months. We're just going from, you know, very short-term objectives. When you think about the future, how far into the future are you thinking?
I guess we have an overall view of where we want, what we can offer to our clients and where we want to be.
Yeah.
As I said before, what we have to do, what we offer our clients depends on what the client needs. So if they take a whole lot of resource in-house, you know, go back 5 years and people were taking developers in-house and doing their own web builds. So you have to change what it is you do, because the client no longer needs what you've been offering. So moving much more into consultancy. So that's about predicting where you think the future is going to go. But then your short-term goals, I think they do come in much closer. But the reality is, in our industry, predicting anything more than 3 months out is fantasy anyway.
Really?
To me, it's about creating the relationships, it's creating the trust, it's creating the knowledge in the client that what it is you do and how you will deliver it when they need it.
Yeah.
And helping them to work out how you can help them best deliver better practice, more intelligent solutions to things, and how long that takes is really up to the client.
And
then, as you say, you know, the weird things that then the economy piles in or pandemics pile in, and how you react to that, and that has to become almost immediate.
It's
very short term.
And have you, I mean, what happened when, have you got examples of when you've had to kind of create that shift very quickly? And I mean, you hear a lot of businesses during COVID, I mean, less so for, I suppose, organisations in the knowledge economy, because we can work remote anyway, but I mean, what are the biggest changes that you've had to do quickly as a result of what's going on with your clients or with the external sort of markets, I guess?
Well, I guess we've always had a very flexible approach with our team, and we always had, if you want to work from home, you can work from home. That was always there. I think it was never really exercised to the level it is now. But reacting to that overnight was no problem. I think within what we saw within marketing was we had, you know, those first 3 or 4 weeks where everyone went, oh, it'll be over very quickly, we'll all be back to normal, but also a slight shell shock of everyone just going, when nothing happened. And then you had a period where I think in the digital space there was a lot of e-commerce happened. We aren't really e-commerce agents, so we didn't jump on that bandwagon.
Sure.
But actually helping, going much more into the consultancy side and helping clients work out what it is they want to do. But we did deliver some tools for our existing clients. We worked with our clients to work out what it was they could do.
So collaboratively kind of, well, I'm going to shift the sort of questions, because there's two things I want to explore. One, and it's really about you individually. First of all, is that you've come from, there's the business side of your life, but there's the sporting side of your life as well, and you've been a swimmer that's performed at an elite level. You know, it's been throughout your entire sort of life, I suppose, is swimming and competing and training at that degree. The thing I'm always interested in, and we're going to talk to Brad Shields later today, from rugby into business, but from your sport, from a solo sport to a degree, when you look at your sort of transferable skills and you look at how you've performed in business, what are the things that cross over? What are the things that you've taken from swimming and applied it into business, and also vice versa?
I think you say it's an individual sport, and yes, it is. But I don't think it isn't. I don't think it is, actually.
Right.
I think the camaraderie you get in the training pool, because you have a respect for the people who don't fiddle with their goggles all the time and don't duck to the bottom of the pool to get out of a set. Or, you know, there is a level of respect about what it is you're each putting in.
Okay.
In order to achieve.
So you're kind of holding each other to account almost.
Absolutely, yes.
Kind of comes back to that self-governing thing, I guess, that you're instilling.
Seeing the coach as someone who is putting you through pain, but it's worth it.
Right. Should a CEO be doing
to be debated.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, asking you to do things that you may not have... As part of his deferred gratification, isn't it? If I work hard now... There is a benefit to this.
Yeah.
I think what's always come to me is so when we in business, when you're doing anything, that whole review process of it went really well, great. Why did it go really well? Yeah. Go back to the beginning and work through it and work out what it is you did do that you could replicate. What were the things you could make it better? If it went badly, go back to the beginning, do exactly the same process. It doesn't matter. It's not like that was wrong. Let's take that to minutiae, and anything that's right, we just carry on regardless.
Yeah.
So, you know, for me, I could do a PB, I can look at the clock and go, my God, that's amazing, I didn't expect to do that time, that's fantastic. Yeah, but you know what, my tumble turn wasn't great, and I didn't nail that. You're always trying to work out how you could do that thing even better.
Yeah, I mean, my thing about that transferable sort of elite performance in sport into business is not as transferable as I often used to think it was. I think that it was this notion of, you know, you used to work in an environment in sport saying, look, you've got to be comfortable being uncomfortable, because actually it's being uncomfortable where you'll find where you'll perform at your highest level. It's where you acquire new skill, new capacity for complexity, all of these kind of notions. Very difficult to take that sensibly into a business, because there are people that just don't want that.
Absolutely. But also I think, you know, sometimes it's also about you also do your best when you're relaxed. So it's that once you've learnt it all and you know you've got all your skills in place and you just let go, and that sometimes is the most glorious place to be. Sometimes about knowing which phase you're in.
And
I think also coming into business, it's about, you know, as an elite performer, you know, you have to phase your delivery of that elite performance.
Absolutely.
You cannot be at that peak performance the whole time.
Yeah.
And I think in business, we expect everyone to be at peak performance.
Yeah.
And I know the people, you know, we've just delivered this, and this. Take some time off, or go into a project that's like just your free and easy space.
Because it's kind of that notion of it has to keep accelerating. And it's just going to be, there's that theory of the catastrophe syndrome where it doesn't actually fade, it drops. And you have it, you see it in sport, you see it with golfers, and you see it, and I think you see it in business as well, where people are just, you know, there's a couple of businesses right now that grew rapidly through lockdown, and they thought that was sustainable, but they haven't changed with the world, and they're still trying to press the accelerator. And you see the share price just tumbling daily at the moment as a result. I won't name them, but you know, you don't have to look far to see who they are.
I think that's true also of what you expect of individuals within the company.
Absolutely.
So your star performers are always going to be star performers, but they can't always deliver at that top level consistently, day after day.
Tell me about the award that you won recently.
Well, it was a big surprise. I was nominated for it, but someone very kindly,
sneakily
asked to nominate me, my expectations were quite low on that, which made me probably more relaxed. Again, that going into relaxation phase, there was a full hour of judging. It was much more like Dragon's Den. But normally in those situations, I would have panicked and been lost for words. But actually, I quite enjoyed it. It was, the lady who nominated me, Sharon, had said you'll enjoy it. And it's a cathartic process almost to go through your business and analyse it. And I was like, actually, it was. It was really good, and I quite enjoyed it. And I think because I was so relaxed, I probably came across better than
sure.
And I wasn't trying to win it. I was just there enjoying it. So when I did win it, I was very surprised.
And the title that you won is?
It was Businesswoman of the Year Award 2022.
And other winners have been?
So Karen Brady,
yeah.
Julie White, Sharon Redrobe, Fleur Easton,
yeah,
all sorts of amazing women who have carried the torch before me, and now it's my job to do something with it.
And what are you going to do with it?
Well,
I mean, I guess you've got two options. I mean, you got two. You could do nothing. I mean, like, it's a nice piece of glass that you could have on your mantelpiece.
Yes, I almost dropped it at the ceremony. Well, I did drop it. I managed to catch it again before it hit the floor.
Yeah, not a good start. Yeah.
So I think I don't want to turn up at the next awards to hand over to someone else and go, yeah, I didn't do much with it. This is my opportunity to forge a new path myself. I suppose I've had one career as an accountant.
Mm.
I've had another career as leading a digital agency.
Yeah.
And now it's like, well, what am I going to do next? I'm not ready to hang up the clogs yet. And,
yeah.
And
using this as a platform to do something different.
To do something, yeah. Right. So to me, it was conversations that we'd had around fairness, around equality, and around sort of saying, recognising, I suppose, where we're at in the business environment at the moment. You've got all the Gen Z millennial conversations around, you're too woke, or and actually saying, well, almost where are we at? What are the journeys that I've been on? Mine's been generally in a people-based business, service-based business scenario. Where do I know? What do I know best? And what are my experiences, and how do they, I actually don't know how those compare to what people see right now. But if you think about, I know that when I went into accountancy, it was heralded at the time that within accountancy and within the law profession, it was pretty much 50-50, and that was the first time it ever happened, that men and women were both going into at the 20, 20, 22, 23, 24 years of age, going into practice.
Sure.
This was amazing. I think the only other area that's true at the moment where women are very well represented is the NHS.
Right.
But then you look at now, 30, 40 years later, and saying, well, where are the top echelons of those professions, where are the women? And there are some women, but there aren't as many as there were that went in. It's not 50-50 or anywhere close.
Yeah, yeah.
So what's happening through that process? And are we therefore are we in danger of replicating that through the next generation of workers? Or have things changed?
Sure.
And to me, I think it's, you know, the conversations we were having were around, well, we've built a system that's based on centuries of one section of society's view of how business and work should be. And that's man's view.
Yeah.
But I want equality and fairness throughout. I want to drive for something that says, well, maybe men and women want something different from the way that life or the business is run at the moment.
Yeah. And I think that's, for me, the conversations that we certainly had in the lead up to it. It's I think it's massively exciting and refreshing at the same time, is saying we're not sort of on a mission here as such, but what we're looking is to start to question the system, and it's the system and it's the structure and it's the processes that we've created almost that have been around for what feels like centuries, that actually if we operate within these systems there is progression, you are able to progress and perform. But what you're saying is that may be the case, but it's not fair, or it's not representing equality, because the people
are
doing that. Or
it's not
getting
the best out of all the people. You're getting, if people conform to one way of operating, then they will succeed. But actually there are multiple ways of operating, and I suppose questioning, going back to that, I've done a PB, but what could we have done better? Are there ways of structuring our assumptions of how business works that can better face the next
And I think that's, so it sounds like, you know, obviously as you say, you've gone from accountant to business leader, and it's almost this next chapter where you've said, okay, with all of this experience as an employee, as a business leader, it feels like a really opportune time just to pause and look at, well, why is this the case? Almost sort of climb to the top of that mountain and look down on that system, and say, ask those questions, those big questions, which actually, as leaders, we don't tend to ask ourselves, or don't tend to explore enough, I think, because we tend to look at some of those issues, but they used to be very narrow and deep in the context of a particular issue that you may be in a board meeting. So why aren't we attracting Gen Z in particular? Yeah. Why aren't, and we'll look at that for 20 minutes in a board meeting, and then we'll move on to the next section. But what it sounds like is we're going to look at the whole piece of that and afford ourselves the next 12 months to really explore these systems and structures, I guess.
Yeah, I think I've been gifted an opportunity where I can hopefully ask people that I who would not normally had access to come together and use their brains and their experience to join together to hopefully, I'm sorry, blah, 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 to build a framework and a set of question marks, I guess, to the rest of industry that sort of says, we've thought about this, we think this might be a better way, and then to start that conversation. We're not necessarily, like you say, we're not revolutionising the way we do work, but to start to have that conversation.
Is there a better way? Is there a fairer way?
Yes.
And I think that's the area which I've heard you talk about, is saying it's not about necessarily being sort of evangelical about this, but it's about saying, can you grow a business and be fair at the same time?
Be fair. There are businesses out there that are fair. It's not.
Yeah.
It's about saying, how do we recognise the diversity of skills, of experiences, that potentially could give us an actually far better way of operating as human beings than we currently have.
Yeah.
And it may be. It might, you know, and then in that question, we might say, do you know what, that process that currently is in existence is the right one?
Sure.
But what about these other three are things that we actually could change and therefore provide a better...
Yeah.
And it sounds a bit woolly, doesn't it?
No.
It's around, you know, it's about how do we recruit, but it's also about how do we progress, how do we recognise progression?
Yeah.
How do we grow? How do we...
Yeah.
How do we sell? How do we... All these different elements
You're right, and I think in our early conversations as well, when you spoke to me in the first instance, we're in the same point of saying, I can't quite put my finger on it, I can't describe it, but it's kind of like this, and it's not easily definable, but there was something about what you were saying that really resonated with me, thinking, yeah, I think I know what you're trying to say, and because I've seen it myself, and I've experienced it myself to that degree, which is kind of where we're exploring this notion of saying, well, how do we really explore this context? How do we really look into this topic and create some questions, some frameworks, some answers that actually is normally very hard to define, but we're going to afford ourselves, we're going to experiment, we're going to almost create this laboratory to allow us to explore this with what sounds like a quickly growing board of other very experienced people that, again, we're not all going to collude and violently agree with each other. We want conflict between ourselves.
Absolutely.
To come up with something that says, no, this is what we feel is right. And when you were describing that, it's like there's something very, very special about this, which I think is quite exciting.
I mean, I don't know whether you want to go into talking about how we've got where we have a group of people who have all these different experiences, but they've all had their own experiences of how this might or might not work. But you've got people who have succeeded, but they've, in order to comply with the rules, they've had to be, if a woman has made it to the top of a professional services company, she's had to, both technically brilliant, but also, if you're not careful, more of a ball breaker than the men themselves, and then other women coming through going, I don't want to be like that.
Yeah. So we've seen that there are women that have had to almost sacrifice their identity to be successful, or they've had to be more malleable and to fit themselves into the system.
Absolutely.
As opposed to just being their true selves.
And who's, you know, there will be men who also have that same. I mean, I was with someone last week who'd worked in America, in Silicon Valley, and he'd been told he was doing a fabulous job. He was on the right path, and if he continued to work the hours he was working at the level he was working, he too could have his boss's job. And he said, and he came the next day and handed his notice in because he realised he just did not want that life.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they're going, it's not just women, it's not just, it's diversity across the board.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think that has almost changed rapidly in the last 2 years. I think a lot of people have started to really question, what do they really want from a work-life balance?
Yes.
What does it actually mean? It's not a cliche anymore. And it's really starting to manifest.
And if we tried to do this 10 years ago, it'd have been pointless, probably.
I think you're right. I think
but
so,
now
yeah.
There's actually a potential for to be heard.
So when you're talking next year, when you give your address, you don't want to be a sort of self-fulfilling prophecy, obviously, but what do you anticipate will be the types of things which, through this process, you're going to really start to uncover or unpick or explore around?
I don't know. In terms of having an agenda, I don't really have an agenda per se. I'm making a difference, opening the conversations up, being able to talk around what might change and how change. I'm always excited by change. If someone had said to me, you're still going to be doing the same job 26 years in the future, I'd have gone, might be here for 5 years. I haven't got the attention span to deal with that. And so that constant change is something I like.
Yeah.
So looking for things where you can change for the better. There's no point in changing just for the sake of it.
Yeah, sure.
Actually to see a real difference. I love seeing how people have come into our business and their careers have progressed and they've gone on to do some exciting things. I love seeing that.
Yeah.
We're just a part of that journey, part of the passage through.
Yeah.
And you hope you've made a positive difference in their experience. And it's almost that same. It's sort of like you're nurturing something new that's going to launch. That's going to be far bigger than anything I could do.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's something you just go. Yeah. Those might have been a little. You know, is it the sand in the
that's
oyster
right.
shell?
Yeah.
Starts that.
Yeah. Yeah.
That process of.
It's exciting.
Contributing
to
something.
Yeah, and like I say, it feels like it's just a really exciting start of something which is going to be. Questioning a lot of how we do things, and I think it's going to make a lot of us uncomfortable. And I think it's going to ask ourselves some uncomfortable questions. I think, you know, when we started talking about it, I look at myself and I look at how I operate in business and the businesses that I've advised and work with, and you start to hold up a mirror, and it's not going to be an easy process. We are going to ask ourselves some uncomfortable questions, but through change, you're not going to achieve anything, I guess, without taking yourself into that degree of discomfort.
It has to be, doesn't it?
Brilliant. Thank you.
Thank you.
One thing that's really struck me was Suzanne's at this stage in her career now where she's won the Businesswoman of the Year, but she's using that as a catalyst of change. She's using that to really experiment and explore the existing systems and structures there are in businesses to create a degree of fairness that again is going to obviously impact the way organisations perform. So it's a seriously ambitious journey that she's about to go on, and something that we'll look at very closely along the way.
At Cooper Parry, we love feedback.
Tell us what you'd like to hear.
Go to cooperparry.com/podcast.
This has been a Hub CP production, curated by Cooper Parry.
The Rebels of Accountancy.